Story hitting 277, drills one into right center field and deep. Nick Markakis goes for it, can't get there. It's one hop up against the wall. Here comes Rasmus. Here comes Aaron Sevilla. They will both score. Two-run double by Brett Laurie. And the Blue Jays turn it into a 4-1 ball game.
One of three hits on the night for Brett Laurie, and a great night for the bottom of the order. Through the first five innings, the Blue Jays 7, 8, 9 hitters, which tonight was Laurie, David Cooper, and Rajay Davis, were a combined 8 for 9, and none of them had gotten out. Cooper reaching on an error by Adam Jones. They had 6 RBIs to that point. They had scored 4 runs, and the Blue Jays, through 5, were up 8-1. The Orioles came back, and it got kind of tense. But Casey Jansen winds up closing it out 8-6. The Blue Jays beat the Baltimores, and through 50 games, the Jays are 26-24. And the Orioles are starting to come back down to earth hard. They have lost 7 of their last 9. They remain tied for first in the American League East. 2 games up on the Yankees, 3 games up on the Blue Jays, and 3.5 games up on the Boston Red Sox. Well, soon to be 3.5 games up on the Boston Red Sox if they can hold on to an 8-3 eighth inning lead over the Detroit Tigers. I'm Mike Wilner. This is the Blue Jays Talk. Phone lines are open at 416-870-0590. Star 590 on the cell, and long distance is 1-888-666-0590. Taking your calls here tonight on another big win for the Jays when it looked to a lot of people as though all was lost after that sweep in Texas. Robert is in Whippy. Robert, how great was it to see Ricky Romero go out there and walk only 1 through 6 innings?
It was great. Good evening to you, Mike, though.
And to you.
And I would like to also thank you for answering my tweets during the game.
No problem.
I was asking about David Cooper. He played pretty well this evening. How long do you see him staying up for?
I think he probably sticks around for a while. I mean, when they brought him up originally, they were going to use him more off the bench and use Yan Gomes more to start. But then when they realized, I think, that Gomes wasn't going to be able to get in the lineup as often as they wanted, they made the move to keep Cooper. But once Vladimir Guerrero comes up, David Cooper's not going to have anywhere to play. If Vladimir Guerrero comes up here to play every day. Now, if he doesn't, if he plays 4 times a week, 5 times a week, something like that, then Cooper will play on those days when Vladdy doesn't. But as soon as Guerrero gets up here, he's the DH and Edwin moves to first full-time. So we'll see. Vladimir Guerrero is certainly pushing the issue. He has played 2 games in A-ball and he has dominated. He's 5-for-10. He's homered twice. And he's not going to be in Dunedin much longer. It would surprise me if by Friday he wasn't up in AA or AAA. And I have to say, it wouldn't surprise me completely if Friday he wasn't here. I don't think that's going to happen. Could happen, though. 416-870-0590. Star 590 on your cell. Long distance is 1-888-666-0590. Brandon in Toronto listening on our flagship station, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Brandon, were you happy with Ricky Romero's performance tonight?
Yes, Mike. I was very happy today with Ricky Romero's performance.
Good. It was good to see. He had walked 24 and 27 and a third innings coming into tonight, and tonight he only walked the 1, and it was Adam Jones in the 4th inning.
You know, Mike, I have a couple questions for you today.
Sure, go ahead.
What do you feel about Eric Thames getting sent down?
I didn't think he'd earned a job. You know, Eric Thames had a really, really, really bad month with the bat, and he certainly wasn't contributing defensively, so it's not a demotion that wasn't earned, although I was definitely surprised to see it happen.
And another question, when Dustin McGowan gets called back up, what do you think he'll be, a relief pitcher or a starting pitcher?
They seem bound and determined to keep him as a starter. They seem to think it's better for his shoulder, that there won't be any ups and downs, there won't be any false starts. He'll have a set routine and know when he's going and, you know, how to warm up and all that stuff. So they seem determined to have him be a starter, but he's not even pitching in minor league games yet. So there's a ways to go before Dustin McGowan is back, if he even comes back. And I'd be surprised if he didn't come back, but not putting any kind of timetable on it. Who knows? And who knows what setbacks may happen on his way through. I mean, you certainly can't anticipate that he's going to have a clean run through his minor league rehab assignments. But I do think it'll be as a starter when he comes back.
Well, Michael, it's a pleasure talking to you, and just keep doing the good work in the talk show.
All right, thank you. I will try my best. Appreciate it. That opens up a line, 416-870-0590. Star 590 on the cell, long distance, 1-888-666-0590. We'll let you listen in on John Farrell a little bit later on. Right now, we're taking your phone calls. The Blue Jays beat the Baltimore Orioles 8-6, handing the O's their seventh loss in the last nine games. And the Blue Jays currently sit three games out of first place in the American League East, a game and a half out of the second wild card spot. Actually, I'm lying. Because the worm has turned in the American League Central with the White Sox win and the Indians loss. So the Blue Jays are two games out of the... See, I hate doing math live on the air. Oh, game and a half. Game and a half behind the White Sox. There we go. Game and a half behind the White Sox and the Yankees, who are tied for the second wild card spot in the American League right now. James in Toronto, listening on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. James, one walk for Ricky Romero. That's good news.
You bet. But, you know, I think after this past four or five games, you knew he was going to come out and shut these guys down. At least I did. I had that feeling for sure.
I had that feeling with the last start, too. You just kind of hope so, but until it happens... it's tough to predict exactly when it was going to happen, but Ricky Romero is not a guy who's going to walk five or six people a game on a regular basis.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if you felt like maybe it was a delivery thing with him, but I guess he's got it straight. It was more of a mental block for him.
No idea. Nobody saw anything in his mechanics, and his bullpens were great and all of that stuff. I don't know. And the fact that he only walked one today certainly doesn't mean that it's beyond the pale to suggest he's going to walk six next time out. We have to see it a couple more times, and then we'll know that he's ready to go.
Right. Hey, Mike, could I ask you maybe about Brendan Morrow?
Brendan Morrow? Yeah. I don't know much about Brendan Morrow, though.
Sorry about that. I was wondering, what do you think about this guy's overall consistency? Because the thing on him has been, you know, he'll give you three great games, you know, two runs a game, and then for the next three games, he'll get lit up for, you know, six runs in three innings.
That's not true at all.
Is this guy ever gonna? Yeah, come on, he's been like historical.
He's been a guy that gets into slumps. Look again, and look at Brendan Morrow's real. I mean, it's very easy to say, and you're not alone in thinking this. It's very easy when you see a guy get beat up every once in a while, and Brendan Morrow by no means is a finished product yet, but it's very easy to say, yeah, he's great for a start and then terrible for a start, or he's great for three and then awful for three. But if you look at his actual pattern of pitching, that's not true.
Okay, but do you think he can ever become like a super consistent guy who goes out there and has a bad game every one in, you know, six, seven, eight, not one every three?
Yes.
Okay, well, that's all I wanted to know.
Yeah.
I wanted your opinion on him.
Yeah, you got to remember some very key things about Brendan Morrow. The first thing is he's 27 years old, and that's a very important thing to remember. He's young. The second thing is he's only been a full-time starting pitcher for 2 years and a bit. You know, 2010 was his first time as a full-time starting pitcher. And so he really got jerked around in the early part of his career by the Mariners. You know, bullpen, rotation, majors, minors, all kinds of stuff. The same sort of thing that the Blue Jays have done to Travis Snyder. Now it's the fact that Snyder's injured that's holding him back. But he's been jerked around a lot over the first few years of his career. Same thing with Morrow, with what the Mariners did to him. And the Blue Jays got him and they said, okay, look, here's the deal. You are a starter. Period. And If you look at what he's done so far this year, his first start of the season was fantastic. You know, one hit over seven innings, didn't give up any earned runs. Next start was okay. Next start was bad. The next four were phenomenal. And it would have been the next six if not for an official scorer's decision that tacked five earned runs onto his record against Tampa Bay. And then he went out and he got lit up by the Rangers. So there you had six pretty good starts in a row and one bad one. And again, this is a guy who's still a work in progress. So we shall see. But yeah, I do really think it's only a matter of time before Brandon Morrow becomes that consistent, top of the rotation, dependable starting pitcher. Thank you for the call. Appreciate it. We will go to Gord in Brantford, listening on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Gord, Ricky Romero goes out there and walks one. What'd you think?
Well, that's good, Mike. That's great. It's great for the Jays and great for us fans to see that. I felt badly for Ricky, though. I think he was maybe disappointed in himself and didn't want to leave the game after the sixth inning. Maybe he wanted to give, you know, that seventh inning and shorten the need for the bullpen.
I'm sure that's exactly how he felt.
Yeah.
But shouldn't have given up the 2-run homer. And if it had taken him fewer than 100 pitches to get through six innings, then he probably would have gone out for the seventh.
It could be. And I don't dispute the move. I just felt badly for him.
Yeah.
Mike, I wanted to get your thoughts on this. I don't know if you caught Jim Leyland's comments after the game last night.
Some of them.
Pardon me?
Some of them.
Yeah. No, and you know, mostly about, again, with respect to umpires, and although it wasn't a serious situation on the foul ball called by the third base umpire, an umpire inserts himself into the game again in a way that isn't necessary and probably not smart. And Leyland calling for saying there has to be accountability by everybody in the game, I'm suspecting that remark made before, you know, to a press conference after the game isn't made in a vacuum. And it makes me wonder, really, if there's some sort of coalescence starting among maybe managers or figures in the game calling for greater accountability among umpires or by umpires.
Well, I hope they do, but I don't think it matters. I mean, I don't think Major League Baseball is interested in going any further with instant replay than they do, and I think it's ridiculous because, to me, it would add 5 minutes to a game if you had an umpire up here in the press box looking at every play and buzzing down when it's close to say, hold on a second, I want to take another look at that, and making a ruling. I mean, it doesn't have to take, like the NFL, doesn't have to take 4.5 minutes to look at every instant replay.
No.
I don't think you're going to see too many umpires getting fined or suspended or anything like that because there's still the notion that they have to have power and they have to be in control and they have to be running the show and they can't be running scared of being suspended. But I really do believe that the umpires have to just calm down a little bit and remember that nobody, not a single person, came to the ballpark to watch them umpire a game. And
well,
they have
absolutely.
To, you know, you use the term inserting themselves into the game, and that's absolutely right. And it has to stop.
Good to hear your thoughts, Mike. Thank you. That's all I needed.
All right. Appreciate it, Gord. Adam, Tom, Sean, the rest of you, hang on. We will get to you. The Blue Jays beat the Baltimore Orioles 8-6, and they're in a position to sweep the series against a team that was in first place when they came to town yesterday with Brandon Morrow on the mound tomorrow night. But right now, we are going to give a listen to the skipper, hear what John Farrell had to say in the wake of this win.
Tonight, Ricky had better tempo, better pace to the overall game. Thought he attacked the strike zone much better than the previous three or four times out. Obviously, the offense by the bottom third of the order, Brett swung the bat very well. Rajay came off the bench and really sparked us with three hits tonight. The sack bunt that turned into a base hit and an error was pivotal at that time of the game, but I think most importantly was Ricky's ability to continue to go out, put up zeros when we scored. Yeah, they did chip away at him for three runs there in his final inning of work, but I thought just overall a very good step in the right direction for Ricky tonight.
Just curious, to impress more with your third baseman on his defense or his offense? Brett had a great game tonight.
The range he has is incredible, evident by the last pop-up that he caught. He comes in on a slow roller to make a throw across the diamond in that way. I think every night we take the field, you're never going to be really surprised by a play that he might make. Diving play to his backhand, just a full range, a full array of plays that he made today. But I think the biggest thing for me tonight was, you know, I thought he stayed behind the baseball. It's the first time in a while he's driven some balls, some fastballs that have been up and away from him, driven them the other way. He's been in a little bit of a tendency to, you know, maybe rush out a little bit, and those balls have been flared to right, but he was able to stay on top of it and drive some balls the other way.
John, even through the stretch when Ricky was walking a lot of batters, he was still getting a lot of strikeouts, but did you see a big difference just in the location that he's always seemed to have tonight?
He didn't miss as many pitches up to his arm side. Occasionally a changeup he'd push, but he's done that in the past, even when he's been sharp or in a real good groove. I just thought more than anything, you know, the first pitch strikes were improvement over his last few outings to give him a chance to go to his secondary pitches. And he never gave in, particularly the at-bat to Hardy, where he had a couple of guys on with two outs, was able to get a key out there, I believe it was in the fifth inning. But just the overall body language, the tempo, like I said, the pace and tempo of the game were much improved tonight.
John, beyond pace and tempo, was there any mechanical improvement that you saw in Ricky's delivery that helped him regain the strike zone as consistently as he did tonight?
I thought it was just his overall timing. When his hands separate on time, that's when he's able to get ball downhill and leverage the fastball through the strike zone with greater consistency. Whether the tempo of the game and the body language just less thinking on the mound and just executing one pitch at a time rather than thinking his way through it, I think there was a little bit more of that tonight, more like him, more like his normal self.
There's John Farrell, Blue Jays manager, and talking exclusively about Ricky Romero and his outing tonight. And Romero seems to have righted the ship, even though it's four runs on six hits over six innings. It's only one walk, and it's only seven strikeouts. And at the point where there were two out in that sixth inning, he had only given up two runs on five hits. So he's working on a whip of one if he gets Chris Davis out instead of letting him take him out of the ballpark for the game. But you can't take away the home run, but still a very encouraging outing for a guy who came into the game with 24 walks in his last 27 and a third innings pitched. I'm Mike Wilner. This is the Blue Jays Talk, 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell, and long distance, 1-888-666-0590. We go back to the phones. Adam is in Newmarket listening on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hey, Mike. Shell's going to die, so I'm just going to get your thoughts on how Cordero's been doing. Just wanted to say that I think he's turned the corner with this start, and his last couple of outings have been a bit better than most of his other ones. Just everybody chirping him. He was a 25-30 game closer for the Reds, and just wanted to get your thought on that, and if this is a downfall of the Orioles.
Well, I think it's certainly starting. The I don't know if a downfall, the return to earth of the Orioles, and it's kind of funny that it begins when they were 27-14, just like the Blue Jays were 27-14 in 2009 to start the season. Then they went on that 9-game losing streak and wound up with 75 wins. The Orioles were 27-14. Since then, they're 2-7. And it seems as though the fall back to earth has begun, and yet they're still in first place. Even if they may only be in first place by a game and a half and tied for first if the Yankees should win tonight. As far as Francisco Cordero goes, including last night's ugliness, he has allowed 9 base runners in his last 8 1/3 innings with 8 strikeouts, and that's great. And those numbers are fantastic. He has, not fantastic, but those numbers are strong. And he's been scored upon in one of his last 10 outings. So I really do think he's going to be fine. And he's been reliable, and as much as people want to enjoy ripping him and enjoy saying how nervous they are and how they turn the game off when he comes in, it's all a giant load. Because in the last 2 weeks, he's been very, very, very good, and once he took him out of the closer spot, he's been very good.
And everybody's also got to remember that we're still rebuilding, and just to be patient. And I think everything will be fine.
I don't know that they're still rebuilding, but they're still building. They're still a work in progress, and maybe the best way to put it is they're not yet a finished product. But that doesn't mean that they shouldn't contend for a postseason spot this year.
All right, thanks very much.
Thanks, Adam. Glad your phone made it through. Sean is in Drayton. I don't know where Drayton is, Sean, but welcome to the program.
Hey, I'm there, Willie. I love you, buddy.
Thanks.
This is about two hours north of Toronto.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I got a quick question. We can sit here talking with Lowry and Batista and Morrow and Romero, but you know what I love? I love the Rajay Davis. I love this move. I wish I could get him to the top of the order. That guy, when he gets on the first base, he's over to third before he steals third base better than most guys that steal second base.
He does, but you know what the operative word there, or the operative clause, I guess, was, yeah, once he gets on base. Because he hasn't been doing that very much. And until he does,
he's such a table setter. It's unbelievable.
Well, but you're not a table setter if you don't put anything on the table
a quarter of the time.
Right?
I rarely ever call in much. I always listen to your show, but I just had a call in. Like, I just think Davis, if we can get him going, he can get it. Like, he had, three hits tonight?
He did have three hits tonight, which is great. Yes. And those are his first three hits in 2 weeks. So it's a nice little sign. But remember, he came into the game today with a .281 on base. You cannot have that at the top of the lineup.
Yeah, but he keeps coming off the bench. I just think speed kills. Like, I just think speed just does if you can get on, right?
If he can get on, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I mean, if Rajay Davis was ever a guy who could get back to the 360 on base that he had a few years back with Oakland, he would be phenomenal in the leadoff spot.
Oh, exactly. Like, even get out with one out, even he's over at third before you could even know it, and then knock him in as we up 1-0. If you get him on base, that'd be great.
Yes, indeed.
Okay, thanks, Mikey.
All right, love that you love the Rajay Davis. There's not much not to love about him, but he's got to get on base more if he's going to be a threat at the top of the lineup. It does appear as though they're going to run him out there in left field quite a bit for the next little while, with Eric Thames down to AAA and Travis Snyder still on the disabled list in AAA. We're going to see a lot of Rajay Davis. Daniel is in Toronto listening on Sportsnet 590. The Fan. Daniel, Ricky Romero, you think he's back?
Oh, Mike, I'm fine with Romero. I think he looked great tonight. I wasn't really too concerned about him.
All right, good.
So he looked like he had a little bit of a change in, not necessarily a change in mechanics tonight, but he sort of had a little bounce off the mound, which sort of, I don't know if it was he was in a good rhythm or what it was, but I'm fine with Romero. I've never really been too concerned.
Beautiful.
Mike, I want to talk to you about the draft.
Okay, but be aware that I'm really not up on much about the draft.
It's not necessarily players. I want to just talk about the new CBA.
Okay.
Specifically the way that the draft is now, how they've got all picks are capped. Like, before, you could draft a guy in the fifth round and pay him as a first rounder.
Right.
Now you can't do that. They've given you, like, the Jays have, and I don't have this committed to memory, I'm looking at my Baseball America draft guide here, the Jays have $8.8 million assigned for their first 14 picks.
Right.
Now, I'm just curious, because I'm still kind of trying to put my hand around how this works. Do you know if the Jays can draft a guy that they would normally, like, say the Jays would draft a guy in, you know, 17th overall that normally would be a 10th rounder, pay him whatever they're going to agree pre-draft, $200,000, and then use that extra money to pay someone else? Or are you...
That's confused me, actually. I'm not 100% sure on that, because I've heard that you have a cap on each spot, but you can't move money over to go over the cap or something. And I really should get that cleared up, because I don't know the answer to that question. I think I did for a couple of minutes in December, but it's gotten pretty confusing on me. So I apologize for not being able to answer your question. I will talk to someone who can. And if you remind me, either tomorrow night on the program or on the Twitter during the game tomorrow, I will get that information out there. But I'm not 100% on that, and I don't want to give you the wrong answer. The Blue Jays take down the Baltimore Orioles. 8-6 is your final score. We will check the rest of the action as we return. Thanks for all the calls. Apologies to those of you to whom we could not get. It is the Blue Jays Radio Network. Welcome back back to Rogers Center, where the Blue Jays beat the Baltimore Orioles 8-6. The Jays in a position to sweep the series tomorrow. And if they do, they could close within two games of first place in the American League East. Let's check the rest of the scoreboard, see what's going on. The Tampa Bay Rays also losers today. The White Sox beat them 7-2 as Phillip Umber gets his first win of the season, in which he allowed a base runner. It was Kansas City over the Indians 8-2, so the White Sox pass Cleveland and move into first place in the AL Central by a half a game. Right now, they are in the top of the ninth inning in Boston, one out, nobody on, and the Tigers trail the Red Sox by a score of 6-3. It is Seattle leading Texas 9-3 in the top of the eighth inning. Josh Hamilton, though, with his 21st home run of the season there. Oakland up 2-0 on Minnesota. That game is in the bottom of the eighth. Yankees trailing the Angels 3-0 in the bottom of the third inning. If the Angels can hold on to win this game with Danny Heron on the mound, Mike Trout, by the way, has an RBI triple, and Albert Pujols a two-run home run in that game off of Andy Pettit. If the Angels can hold on to win that game, the Blue Jays would be just a half game back of the Yankees for third place in the AL East. Tomorrow, brooms are out. And if you have one, bring it down to Rogers Center and see if you can watch the Blue Jays try to sweep away the Orioles. They'll have Brandon Morrow on the mound coming off the worst start of his career. He is 5-3 up against the man who's been the ace for the Orioles this year, Jason Hamill, who is 6-1. We are on the air at 7 o'clock Eastern time for a 7:07 first pitch. Make sure you join us. You've been listening to Home Hardware Blue Jays Baseball. This copyrighted broadcast is presented by authority of Rogers Blue Jays Baseball Partnership. It may not be reproduced or retransmitted in any form, and the accounts and descriptions of this game may not be disseminated without the express written consent of Rogers Blue Jays Baseball Partnership or the Blue Jays Radio Network. For Jerry Howard, Alan Ashby, Tom Young, Dylan Brown, Dan Riggio, Gord Brunn, I'm Mike Wilner. Good night.